Hey guys, Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast, and I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com. Or on Facebook at Satties LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. Our mission is simple. We want to help you become a better hunter. We believe that mobility kills and efficiency will set you free.
Welcome to the Mobile Hunter Podcast. We're your hosts, Rick Cates, Josh Luck, and Chris Leppert.
What's up?
Hey, everyone.
And tonight, we are bringing you another installment of Adventures of the Mobile Hunter, which is Chris's adventures out of state to lands never visited.
Old dipshit didn't mess it up this time. We got a story of success.
Oh man. So, again, this is a installment of our Turkey Talk series, and we are going to be going into Chris's hunt out of state in the land of the free, home of the brave, the great Lone Star State of Texas.
Man, Texas is amazing. It really is its own place. It's tough to describe until you experience it, and God let us never go to war against Texas.
We saw what happened to Santa Ana in the 1800s. It was not good.
Yeah, he lost all his oil rights too.
Jesus.
So I tried to tell you about Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, some of our listeners probably know, but when did I go? Was it 2019?
2019.
I think so. Yeah.
2019, I went on, it was an outfitted hunt. I went with a buddy and a group of guys. And it was just, you know, just camp and target shooting for the most part. But it was, like Chris said, a world like none other. It's just a target-rich environment. Like, if you haven't experienced Texas, like, it's something to go experience.
Yeah. And for all those, I've received a few messages asking me what outfitter I went through. I want to be very clear. I did not go with an outfitter. I was just blessed more than anybody could ever understand. You can make fun of me all you want and actually say that I went with one, because technically I was on a really big piece of private land. So, I mean, it might as well have been, but I can assure you that I didn't pay for a hunt in any way or anything. It's not a place that does hunts or anything. It's just a buddy who's actually a part of our show. And, you know, Tyler Stallings of Stealth Rig, I kept telling him about how much I love turkey hunting. And while we were talking about the shows and everything, and he's like, well, you should come down sometime and, you know, show me how you do it. I've never really turkey hunted before. And the whole time, I mean, this is like a girl inviting you upstairs or something. Like, I'm like, don't joke. Do not play games with me, because I will show up at your doorstep. It's like the meme with it down in the sewer. He's come here. I'm like, oh, really? We got turkeys down here. Oh, wow. Are they gobbling? So, I mean, he said that, and I said, well, like, when works for you then, like right now? Like, I've never flown before. I'm about to learn how to fly basically and experience that, where what I need to fly, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, you'd fly into San Antonio. And I'm like, oh my God, this is meant to be. My first flight is coming up, and my wife, she's got a conference in San Antonio, and we're flying into San Antonio. So that could be like a scouting trip where I could learn to navigate airports and stuff. And this, you know, for those that are laughing right now, I get intimidated by things like that, because I don't want to pay for a plane ticket and then miss my flight. That was a big fear of mine. Also, dying, Alanis marmoset. She's been coming for me since 1996. So I didn't want to, you know, have anything bad happen, but, you know, mainly I was worried about like missing a flight, getting lost, et cetera, getting on the wrong plane, whatever. We saw what happened to Joe Burrow when he was young. So for those of you that get that joke, Macaulay Culkin, Home Alone, come on. But anyway, so I end up, you know, learning how to navigate an airport, went to San Antonio, had a blast. Flying was everything I dreamt it'd be. If you're listening to this and you're scared of it, one thing that blew my mind was how nonchalant everybody was about it. And when I started seeing how many planes actually take off like every few minutes and how many planes land every few minutes, and then my brother-in-law's an aviation engineer and, you know, gave me some stats, and I'm like, that's actually pretty damn safe, man. Like, but
safest way to travel.
Still had a pretty rough, probably the only true panic attack of my life. I was all psyched out and then, you know, like ready to go. And my wife showed me the plane and it looked like a damn tuna can. It was tiny. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to cram us all into there. Oh my God. I just started losing my shit and couldn't breathe hardly. And it was crazy. So learned that though. It was really fun. Glad I, you know, forced myself to do that and didn't bitch out, because it would be easy to. Couple weeks go by, you know, get everything finalized for the trip back to Texas. But one thing that I hadn't done yet is check a bag. And again, you know, it can't just be a bag with clothes. It's got to have a freaking weapon in it. So I'm like, oh, shit. Like, well, what are they going to do? Are they going to, like, pat me down? Are they going to want to inspect everything? They didn't even care. It was a bow. They didn't care at all. And you know, to preface this, I was asked to leave my gun at home. We were filming clips and stuff to promote a product called the Stealth Rig and Stealth Rig Light. So I thought, well, I'll come bow hunt it. You know, I've got buddies that go bow hunt Texas. If they can do it, I can. Well, I'll feed you baby birds. So, you know, we navigate the checking of the bow and everything goes well. I get down there and, it, you know, I left Ohio and I think it was like 40 degrees and spitting snow when I left, and I get to Texas and it's like 85 and sunny and breezy. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to go back home. It's pretty nice, you know, because I'm not a big fan of hot weather, but if you got some air movement going on, I'm all about it. So Tyler picks me up. We didn't get back to their, they've got like a barn dominium on their ranch. And we didn't get back to the barn dough until probably close to like 11 o'clock at night or something central time. So it's fairly late. Then, you know, had to like get hunting clothes and get the pack ready and everything. I didn't take my turkey vest because I felt like bow hunting in a turkey vest is stupid. That's just going to hinder you. So I just took my fast pack from Tethered and attached my turkey seat to it. Stopped and bought a freaking Avian X LCD strutter. I thought it would be a good move. Turned out that wasn't a good move, but I got a lot of cool ideas for the next time I turkey hunt down there.
Is it chopping the tail off that Avian X strutter and putting her?
I am not taking that shitty decoy anywhere near where I'm turkey hunting. I would put a real Jake fan on it. I understand now why people advise to put a real fan on it, because the fake fan in any kind of a strong breeze at all will fold in half. Sounds like the flag flying in the air, and it'll scare the living daylights out of the Tom. So we'll get to that story. So, you know, get everything ready to go that night. And wake up the next morning and it's literally like a dream come true. Like when I say you couldn't do a regular hunt as close to an outfitted hunt as this, I'm dead serious. I get there. They've got what I later found out was a Toyota Tundra stripped. They took the top completely off of it, Linexed the whole damn truck, which is phenomenal because you can't scratch it then. They go up, you know, mesquite trees are dragging along the sides. Doesn't hurt it at all. They put a roof on it like what you'd see on a golf cart, only, you know, five times that size. And so the whole time I'm like, damn, man, is there, like, we're driving through and I feel like I'm in Africa. Like Texas Hill Country looks like Africa, like freaking Kenya or something. And I leaned over to Tyler and I'm like, is there going to be a giraffe sticking its head above these trees? Where the hell am I? So we got to the first spot. And again, this is a guy who's like, hey, will you teach me how to turkey hunt? So I'm like, oh my God, he knows nothing. Well, he knew something because he took me right to where some birds had roosted before. I don't know if he'd bumped them off a roost or seen them flying up or whatever happened, or just knew that he saw turkeys in the area. But
we should be clear about this too. You're hunting Rios.
Yeah, down there. I'm hunting so these are not Easterns. These are Rios, which are in, you know, basically like central and western Texas. And then you go up through like Oklahoma and Kansas and all that. And Nebraska. And you
New get Mexico's. Into
the, I think the Rios. Is there a Rios in New Mexico too? I would assume so. I think they have a small population of Goulds somewhere maybe.
Yep.
Maybe. Yep. Maybe they're in Arizona or something. Then of course, Mexico, but... And I could be wrong about that. But, yeah, so we're hunting Rios. Made a post, for those of you that saw, made a post getting everybody's advice on Rios and Texas. And everybody's like, oh, my God, it's so easy. And the whole time I'm like, yeah, here we go. Like, we'll see how easy it is. And it was easy-ish until it came time to kill, basically. That's because we had a damn bow in our hand, though. I mean, had I had a gun, it would have been the word that Rick does not prefer that rhymes with grape. So we pull up to the spot, shut the vehicle off, walk 2 yards. I think we might have just barely shut the doors or something, and I heard birds sound off, and it's like 20 or 30 minutes before daylight even. I thought, oh my God, here we go. We've got, like, I don't even know if there's birds on this farm. And now we've just confirmed we have turkeys gobbling. So life's good. So walk close to this little hill, we'll call it. And I'm listening and I did a little hoot owl call and they gobbled and then I hooted real loud, you know, basically howled at them. And it sounded like the whole valley erupted. It was crazy. And I just thought, oh shit, this is going to be nuts. Like, this is going to be over quick. Yeah, right. So damn turkeys, man. So I walked like 10 more yards and I kind of round this corner. And I look and I see this great big tree and the tree's like 60, 70 yards from me. And I froze and I thought, oh shit, you know, it's the biggest tree there. And everything everybody told me, like, I knew there were birds in that tree. And right about the time I had that thought, a wall of Rios just starts pouring out. And as the birds are flapping, there's multiple birds gobbling at the flapping, and then they fly out and more birds gobble. And then other birds gobble down in the ravine or the valley or whatever. And I'm like, I just spooked every turkey in Texas. Oh my God. I screwed it all up. Like, dang, man. So I just thought, well, this is, now we're fall turkey hunting. Okay. You know, that if they're as stupid as everybody says, let's play this game. So I went down there, got set up against a tree that I felt was good enough. And we've got a cameraman and Tyler. We call the bird in, I don't know, 7 to 10 minutes. And he was one of the ones, I believe, that was actually roosted a little further down. Gorgeous bird. Perfect footage of the bird. Comes in strutting. Everything's perfect. And an antlered buck walks out and scares the shit out of the bird. Starts blowing at us. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. So we tried to put a stalk on the bird because he didn't really booger. And the other thing that I didn't know is that they don't alarm putt. They bubble cluck instead of alarm putt.
Seriously?
So the whole time I'm thinking, oh, we got a calm bird. No.
You got an alert bird that's pissed.
He's pissed. He's like, oh, shit. These bitches are trying to kill me. So I thought, all right, well, let's move on down a little ways and we'll see if we can strike some more. You know, we heard birds gobbling all over the place. So we walk like 100 yards, maybe, if that. And I just check them and like 35 yards. And I'm like, oh, my God. And before we could even think, the bird's at 18 yards and closing and literally gets to like 14, 15 yards, walks past a hole in the brush. And then with his body ahead of the hole, leans back and pokes his eye through the hole and mean mugs us and takes off. So I'm like, oh, awesome. Then I look up ahead and I see the Chris Leppert special. You got the boss bird with all the hens strutting 60, 65 yards ahead of you in the wide open. And then he goes behind this giant bush. And the whole time I'm like, I could roll run right to that bird with a gun and kill him or, you know, whatever. But we got three guys. We got bows. We're not getting to him. And tried to call. He wasn't having none of it. He had his girls with him. So they booger. And at that point, I'm pretty depressed. We walk 150 yards. We strike another bird. And we get set up in this twisted oak grove. I'm scratching leaves. Finally, I found some damn leaves somewhere. They don't have hardly any down there. And this bird comes in. Probably the most perfect I've ever seen a bird come in. Just strutting and gobbling. Red, white, and blue head. Perfect tail fan colors. Sun hitting him. Gleaming off of him. And it's right through a bottom that's just stuffed full of cactus and mesquite. And it is just Texas.
I'd say as Texas as you can get.
Texas AF, dude. And I thought, oh my God. This is the bird that's going to die. This is perfect. I don't even care about what happened now. The bird hits the roadway, struts all the way in, and I think to myself, you know, he gets kind of behind a little bit of brush, and he's probably at about 30, 35 yards, and I think, okay, I know how this goes. Like, this isn't like even a deer. Like, a turkey just has to barely move, and your shot's going to miss by a mile. You got a tiny fist-sized target. So I'm like, man, do I draw now? Should I draw now? I'm like, no, don't do that. Let him come up here and get hung on this decoy, and then we'll bust his ass. Because as soon as I draw my bow, of course that turkey will stop and stand there and stare. And, you know, so I'm like, you don't need that in your life. So when in doubt, be aggressive, Chris. The bird comes up, gets 20 yards away, and sprints into the decoy, and the wind picks up, folds the fan in half, sounds like the American flag in Wyoming during a windstorm, and scares the shit out of the bird. The bird runs, you know, 5 yards, turns around, goes back into full strut, runs back up the decoy, turns around, and flies away. And the whole time, I'm just sitting there dumbfounded, like, I can't believe what just happened. And so we walk around the rest of the morning, couldn't really strike anything up.
Yeah. So tell the listeners that that whole sequence of events that happened, at what time in the morning was that? You had that many encounters through that. So through like the first 2 hours of the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Roughly. Might've been quicker than that. I mean, and what was funny is I'll go ahead and throw this out there. So things people, some people talked about the wind. They did warn me about the wind. Two things that weren't mentioned, how hard the ground is. To get a stake in the ground for a decoy is beyond a nightmare. Then everywhere I went, the sun was in my eyes. And then I realized, oh, these trees are like 10 feet tall. There's nothing that provides a substantial amount of shade to hide, you know, provide you with better vision, whatever. There really isn't a way to escape the sunlight. So it was very difficult to hide. All the trees are tiny. You get into the twisted oak groves, and that's your best shot. You might find a big oak or a cottonwood or something, but other than that, you got tiny trees to hide up against. So it got to be like, I think 9:30 or something like that. We went to another spot, got a hen fired up, didn't get a gobbler at all. And we had to go back and meet a gentleman that was meeting us to kind of collab with these videos we were shooting. And so we go back there, we go back out that evening to try to roost hunt where we went that morning, and called a Jake right in. Could have killed the Jake 1,000 times. The other thing, as we're walking up, there's a strutter at 60. And this could have been one of those times where Chris dropped a bomb with him, but because he was super still. And one of our guys didn't see him right away and kept walking. And I don't think he heard me. And I was like, stop. And boogered the bird. So we go set up, call in a Jake. We hear a gobble. The gobbler comes in to like 70. But of course, you know, we're bow hunting. And I'm like, well, all right, we'll kill you. You stay right here. So we had gone out previously with the ranch hand, and he had shown us a pasture field where they had removed all the cattle within the past week or two. And when he was in there calling cattle, he had spooked some birds off the roost. And he said there were quite a few of them in there. And I thought, all right, you know, and we go and you try to find sign, and you know, the ground's so dry, you don't see that much. It's not like here. So we go in there the next morning, and there are birds. There are so many birds. There's way more birds than what we saw in that first spot. And I caught in nine birds by 8 o'clock.
Wow.
like it was crazy. And I couldn't win. I missed a bird with my bow. I couldn't range anything. I couldn't, you know, every time a turkey would come in, it'd spot you. It wouldn't like what was going on and freak out. Nobody would lock onto decoys and just be stupid like I'm used to. You know, eventually you find one little dumbass in the crew that'll walk up and spur the bird, you know, the decoy or whatever. And they just weren't having it. You could get the birds into 20 or 30 yards, but the decoy setup just wasn't there because you couldn't get the stake in the ground. Didn't have the real Jake fan. My DSD setup's phenomenal. I've got this Jake strutter with a real Jake fan, and the Jake fan looks shitty, which I think improves it because it makes it look inferior. The decoy is already small as it is, and I'll set it down low to make it look even more inferior. I put it over a bedded breeder hen, which pisses off dominant birds a lot. And I'll put a feeder out, you know, not a corn feeder, a feeder hen.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like that helps them calm down a little bit. And I could see where that would work too, because these birds, I mean, there's like a lot of birds together all the time. So, you know, we couldn't get a stake in the ground where we wanted, and just nothing would work out. We couldn't hide. There was no big tree to conceal yourself. If I had to describe it, it would be like sitting up against those tiny willow saplings you find in the middle of like a CRP field or something.
Okay.
It's just the tiniest shit ever. You cannot hide. And so I found this brush pile and I'm like, oh, thank God. Well, I put the decoy on the other side of it. I'm calling, hoping that the birds, you know, I'm pitching calls on the other side, hoping that they'll go to the other side and see the decoy and come around and give me a chance to draw. Well, they're all gobbling, you know, behind me and to my right and coming right to me. And I'm like, damn, man, like somebody just play my game. So I turn around. Well, the footage later revealed the best bird of the weekend was called in directly behind me to the decoy. And I could have shot it with my bow, but I didn't know it was there at all. Because I was looking at the other birds. So missed a bird. I kept hearing the... I'm like, well, that's not a Texas songbird. Like, that's got to be a gobbler spitting. And then I look over and I'm like, oh, my God. It's like 25 yards, strutting super slow, calm, you name it. And then he boogers and takes off running. I'm like, I'm about to do the bow toss at this point. I'm like starting to feel really frustrated. And talking to Tyler, I'm like, hey, I hear these other birds up here. There's a group of them. I don't know if they're Jake's or whatever. Right now, I just want something to die. So you stand on this strip of the bushes. I'm going to get there's we're on the other side of like a 15, 20 yard wide strip of mesquite and other assorted Texas bushes. So we'll call it brush. And so I'm like, hey, stay on this side. I'm going to go to the other side. And I'm just going to call and do my thing. And hopefully they'll come to one of us. Shit, 5 minutes later, I hear his bow go off. And I'm like, oh, cool. There was a group of five Jakes. And they came right to him. He shot him. Shot one. And we ended up getting a turkey on the ground and closing the story. And he had told me, you know, if we were struggling, he'd let me take a gun out. Borrow a gun from the ranch hand. And go out. So I'm like, all right, I think I got a pretty good idea here. Tyler, why don't you let me take a gun this evening? And if I can put one down, we'll come back here. You know, we'll hunt a different place this evening. And then we'll come back here with our bows and try to get a tom on the ground with a bow. Because I think this is the trick to hunting these birds is not being stationary, but being, wait for it, and this is the truth, mobile. Not being pinned down in a seat when you got to draw your bow and reposition and do all the bullshit that comes with bow hunting a turkey when you're not in an enclosed canopy blind. So he liked the idea. We borrowed an old turkey gun from the ranch hand. He had some 2 3/4 inch 6-shot and 5-shot. I'm like, here we go, baby. Shouldered the gun a couple of times and felt pretty good about it. And we went out. I think it took me, I don't know, 10 minutes to strike a bird up. It might have been 15 tops. And to help you understand how spoiled I was at this point, that was like an eternity. Because it was normally it was like the first or second series of calls, you got a gobble. So I strike this bird up. And he's a long ways off. I'm going to guess the bird was between 300 and 400 yards away. And he didn't even gobble right after I called. It was probably 30 seconds to a minute or more, 90 seconds, something like that, after I called. And it was just like a, oh, you're over there? Well, I'm over here, kind of gobble. So I'm like, all right. So I called again. But I kept my mouth call in and waited, and he did the same thing. It came a minute or two later, but I was ready. And as soon as he gobbled, I cut his ass off with a cackle. I started cutting, and he double gobbled. And I was like, all right, that's a little better. And then as I'm kind of like looking around, like, okay, you know, we got this big opening here. but we've got sun plastering us, not a lot of good spots to hide. And, you know, a couple minutes goes by and he gobbles and he's already covered probably 30%+ of the distance. And I'm like, oh shit, like this bird is coming right now. And I look back at the guys. I said, well, here's, if we're ever going to get, you know, good footage and everything, like this is going to be the ticket right here. I look behind us and there's a twisted oak grove with plenty of shade, plenty of little scrubby brush growing underneath it. And I thought, guys, let's go around this little tree line, get down in the creek, and then get up in there where we can definitely cover any movement possible. Let's treat this as serious as we can so this little bastard doesn't booger on us. Because if we get set up, the bird's dead, I think. We got a gun now. We got set up. I think I sat there for 5 minutes, looked up, and there's the big black garbage can lid in the middle of the roadway coming towards us. And he'd walk 10 steps and strut, pop his head up, look around, 10 more steps and strut, and did that the whole way in. And it was just the most beautiful thing. One thing I noticed about the Rios is their wattles and their snoods seem to be like a little bigger, a little baggier, hang down a little lower. So it was kind of neat. And he was a pretty good looking bird, seemed to be pretty good size. And as he's coming in, I noticed he had a full fan, obviously, and a good beard on him. I'm like, all right, well, we've checked the boxes. Now I'm going to do the thing that I hate the most and be patient. And I'm going to let you strut your ass all the way into the end of my gun barrel, basically. And because, I mean, you just never know what's going to happen. A hawk could booger that bird in your hunt. Everything that you did right is screwed up.
Hey, guys. Rick here from the Mobile Hunter Podcast. And I'm here to tell you about one of our sponsors, Saddy's LLC, Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads that have been putting down deer, waterfowl, and turkey all year long. The Saddy's Fatty, the turkey load that we use, can stop a bird dead in its tracks. Check them out at saddiesllc.com. That's SattiesLLC.com or on Facebook at Saddy's LLC and tell them the Mobile Hunter Podcast sent you.
So I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, like, the cameraman is eating this bird alive right now. The bird gets into 25 yards. I had had enough. And I thought, all right, it's time. So I shoot him, waylay him, and talking to the cameraman, Randy, he never got an ounce of footage, never knew the bird was there. He was and I just thought, damn, man, like that was a hurt. But again, these guys aren't turkey hunters. Had I had the camera, and keep in mind, I would not come close to this guy when it comes to talent with a camera. He's phenomenal. But I would understand where to be looking, when to be looking, and how to get the footage. So I think if you had an experienced turkey hunter, you'd have got the footage. But he just, his biggest thing, which I loved about him, is he didn't want to screw it up. And I really appreciated that. But I also hated, you know, that we didn't get it. Because this was where, you know, for you film nerds, this is full sun, perfect lighting, the magic hour of the evening, where you can get all of your, you know, HD 120, super slow-mo shit, and the whole knot, like, you can lay it down. Like, you're going to get great footage. So, you got me. What?
Was his view obstructed? I'm trying to figure out how he didn't see the bird.
I think his view was obstructed, and I think he was pretty focused on me. He was running two cameras. He had a camera pointed at me, and then the bird didn't gobble once he showed himself, which I wish that I would have had the presence of mind. But again, I'm sitting there too, like, I don't want to screw it up. And as soon as you call, they know right where you're at. So I'm like, well, he's coming right down the roadway right to us. Why would I make another sound? But I wish I could have just made him gobble, or if he would have gobbled once, he would have known. So I kind of run towards the bird, and then I was pretty overwhelmed because I was like spent a decent amount of money on a plane ticket to get down there, and a lot of time arranged for childcare. My wife went through stuff to get me there. I went through stuff. My father-in-law and mother-in-law came to watch my kids. Like, went through a lot to go to Texas to kill a bird. Was excited about, you know, a new subspecies, an experience hanging out with a dude that I got to meet over the weekend. Then turns out I met the gentleman, Randy Couturi, who was our cameraman, and bonded with him. He was cool as hell.
Not the former UFC heavyweight champ or anything. It's thinking.
Every time Tyler mentioned his name, I'm like, are you talking about like that guy? No, that's not him. So I kind of just was a little overwhelmed and just kind of knelt down and thanked God and just appreciated the moment for a second. And here's where we get to the rough part. And you thought that not killing turkeys all weekend until then was tough. So I get up to the bird. Keep in mind, this bird is motionless the whole time. I simply went to unload the gun to make sure the gun was clear, because that's like a safety thing I would prefer to do. There was a time where I didn't do that, and I had a gun in my hand with the hammer cocked and didn't realize it. So I vowed from then on, anytime anything like that happened, I'm unloading the damn gun, because complacency kills you, literally. And so, you know, the gun never went off or anything, but it just scared the shit out of me. It slipped my mind, you know. But you get caught up in all those nerves and feelings and stuff, and your buddy kills a bird or whatever, and, you know. So, as I jack the shell out, the turkey starts losing its shit, flapping, you know, the death nerves. Well, tail feathers are coming out left and right. I'm like, no, no, God, no, like, that's my trophy. Like, people care so much about beards and stuff, and all I want is that beautiful cream-tipped fan. Like, come on. And it gets hung up in, like, a circle in a ring of cactus. And I finally, you know, it got hung up. The nerves ran out. It figured out. I got the bird out by its feet. I never, ever thought about it at all. I slung that bird over my shoulder on my back, and I'm still picking out cactus needles out of my ass and my back and my shoulder blades and my sides. I'm here to tell you, they hurt a lot. And they don't just pull out. Like, there's little barbs and shit. So I was still happy, though. You know, got the ride out with a gorgeous gobbler, Texas sunset, like, just badass. You know, we did interviews and stuff that night. You know, Tyler was super excited that we put down birds, and Randy's licking his chops, you know, taking photos of these birds. It was just a cool, cool weekend, and we still had another morning. Well, one thing that was interesting that I didn't expect. So the wind was basically like 25 miles an hour all day, all night, never let up. Well, it died down to nothing on Sunday morning. So we could hear gobblers forever away. Like, there were turkeys everywhere, way more than I thought. And so one thing that was interesting is I never had a single call in that day. I had a bird at like 30 yards and couldn't get him to peek around a bush. Like, I did everything in my power to get a bird to come out into the open to strut so that Randy could get some really good, crisp, good lit, you know, well lit footage, and maybe Tyler could kill one, and it just wasn't happening. They had no interest. They all stuck to cover, which again is like those Kentucky birds we dealt with, Josh, like the opposite of turkey things. They stayed away from all openings and stuck to cover when that wind was gone. And it just blew my mind. Now, could I have went in there and killed, like, my limit with a gun? Yes. I could have easily done that. No problem. But we had bows again. I actually didn't even take my bow that morning. I was satisfied with how things went. I didn't. All I wanted to do was call and have fun and hear gobbles at that point. So we ended up being unsuccessful. We called it a morning, you know, around 9:30 or something like that. It gets pretty hot pretty quick, and we could, you know, play the game, but we had packing and cleaning. We had to clean up the barn dominium, and everybody had to pack and just get everything ready. And I still had like a 2-hour drive, you know, ride rather, to the airport and stuff. And so we went back. I figured out how to fit a wild turkey in my bow case and fly it home, which was badass. I was able to take the breast and the leg meat, the tail fan, the beard, and the claws with the spurs, get them back home and everything. So it was funny. Like I was telling you guys earlier, the weight limit's 50 pounds and it hit 49 on the scale. And I'm like, oh my God, nobody breathe. Like, I don't want to have to like unpack frozen meat. And these people start questioning me. Although we were in Texas, so that was fine, but made it home safe, and here I am, man. So it was a phenomenal experience. I would love to go back with a 410 with like whatever shell. Just give me a 410 with lead number fours and a 2.5-inch shell. Like, I don't even need TSS. Just let me not have to draw a bow. Like, so it was funny because Tyler walks up and hands me a snake gun, which is like a less than child size 410. And literally that's all they use it for, is shooting snakes. And I was like, you know, you're smiling and giggling, but I could put a Saddies in this thing and dust the shit out of a turkey at like 50 yards. And he's like, oh, really? And it was interesting too, because he did say, and he's a pretty big bow hunter, invented the stealth rig and won ATA with the stealth rig light. He ended up beating the damn trophy line sticks, which that's what led us to meeting him. Because when we heard that trophy line got third, my first words to Josh are, what the hell beat those sticks? And when he said a bino harness, I'm like, nah, bullshit. No way. What does the bino harness do? Special stuff when nobody's looking? Like, what's going on? And so we looked the gentleman up, reached out to him, talked about him, you know, talked to him about coming to the shows, and he was very interested and all that. And so, I mean, that's kind of how we met Tyler, is because of, you know, us figuring out that he won ATA. But super, super cool experience to get to go down there and play with those guys.
Sounds like an awesome time, man. I'm glad this out of state trip turned out way better than your 30 degree Alabama hunt this January.
Yeah, that was, I'm still sore about that. Shut the deer down, and it was crazy. So yeah, we're 1-for-2 on the year with out of state trips. Hopefully not terrible. I mean, it's turkeys, and it was like unhunted, never hunted before, private land, stupid little idiot Rios, but still, like I nearly called in every bird that I heard. And I'm terrible at calling turkeys.
But still, like that's an amazing experience just to be able to go and do that. And whether the birds are dumb or not, it's still one of those things where if you got a piece of unmolested public land that had never been hunted before, and you walk in there and you hit a call and five birds walk up, it's right. Like, It's the same to similar thing. Like it's a really cool experience. I'm just glad you got on a damn plane finally in your life, mm-hmm. and that you kind of jump the canyon on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tough, man. I mean, you guys know me, but for those that don't, I'm a pretty anxious guy when it comes to certain things. I like to be in control. I don't do roller coasters or, you know, I don't want to bungee jump. My brother-in-law doesn't care about being alive, so he'll do whatever. He tempts death constantly. And so after I got back from my first round of flights with my wife, he's like, "Oh, you ready to go jump out of a plane and do some skydiving?" I'm like, "You're a druggie, dude. There's no way, like, no reason for me." That doesn't save me anything. I still have feelings and I'm happy with my life. I don't need to feel like I'm perfectly content. Not now. If you want to talk about jumping out of a plane and parachuting onto a landlocked piece of BLM, I'll have that conversation. Official. But I ain't trying to jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
That was my first time flying. You just gotta do it big the first time.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'd never been on a plane, so I figured the first time I'd be on a plane, I would just jump out of it.
Proving my point, pretty much. Feels nothing, wants to feel something. God, that's crazy.
The whole plot of Dexter, wasn't it?
I will say, though, it's very weird. Flying feels fake to me because the world becomes so large. Like, you see the world when you're up there. It's not like being in a car and looking at everything passing by. You're looking at, like, gigantic clouds and gigantic pieces of ground and entire rivers. So while you're covering a lot of ground, it just doesn't feel like it at all. What's funny is, and I hate to say this, but I'm probably the only human being in the world that was literally terrified. I want to be clear. I was scared to death to fly. But I remember having a dream once where I flew. And I remembered thinking takeoff was the greatest thing of all time. And I remember that, like, really hit me in the feels. And even though I was having a pretty good panic attack, I had to contain myself from, like, screaming when we took off. Cause I'm just like the whole time I'm like, I'm basically Tom Cruise in Top Gun, right? Like, I'm just out of my mind. Cause I used to work at an airport, and this is the other embarrassing thing. I could have flown anywhere basically for free. I could have flown, killed an elk, and hauled the whole thing back for free, you know, buddy, buddy with the pilots, you know, whatever. Like, and I didn't because I was a little bitch. And so if anybody is listening to this and you're afraid to fly, just go fly, man. I missed out on things that I probably, like, the course of my life could be different right now because of that. That said, I used to go watch those planes every night at 2 and 3 a.m. take off. And when the big Airbuses and the Boeing 747 would take off, it would shake the shit out of the ground. And I would just, every time, like, I never got bored of it. I'd just be so jacked up from the raw power that you could feel and hear. And so when I had my first takeoff, I just lost my shit basically and was like overwhelmed with excitement while I'm freaking out at the same time. So it was pretty awesome though.
Nice, man.
So that is the story of my very, very cush out of state experience. I'm not gonna lie. I figured I was headed to a pretty nice piece of land and all that, but it felt luxurious to me, honestly. Now, here's what I'd do differently for those that might try public land in Texas or go be on a much smaller ground, you know, piece of ground or whatever. I would have a welder weld a little cylinder onto a 5 or 10 pound weight, probably a 10 pound weight, that a decoy stake could fit perfectly into. And then I would never have to stick a decoy stake into the ground ever again. I'd carry that extra weight with a smile on my face because
decoy good idea
is huge. And I would fix it to where the decoy couldn't spin. And I would also take my DSDs. I'm not partnered with those people in any way, by the way. I paid full price for all their shit. It's just better than everything else from what I've found. It's good. And it, I mean, the results have shown every time I hunt birds with those decoys, they die. Like, it's crazy. So I would ditch any kind of blind whatsoever. And I would obviously take a gun. If I had to take a bow, though, I would stand behind bushes and be completely mobile and like ready to move, ready to turn, whatever. The other part, I kind of cut myself off. So we bow hunt because we're filming for this stealth rig and stealth rig light and an e-bike company. Tyler looks at me and he's like, we need to come back next year and do this with guns. And I just smiled ear to ear and I'm like, damn right we do. Like, you couldn't even, we'd have a damn turkey pole out there lined with turkeys. Like, it'd be phenomenal. And they own enough ground where you could, you know, each kill a bird and then go to another place and kill a bird and you wouldn't, nice, you know, deplete the damn population of Texas. So, but that's
the deal, man.
Pretty much what I do. So yeah, it was a fun time. Again, you know, super blessed to get an invite to hunt private land in Texas. Got a Derek Craig. He's like, man, if you ever get the chance to hunt Texas for turkeys, jump all over it. It's phenomenal. There's nothing like it. And you know, it's expensive and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, oh, shit, man. Okay. You know, whatever. And then a couple weeks later, I'm like, hey, I got invited to hunt some private land in Texas. Please. This is awesome. So, but again, you know, you never know what to expect. But this time we were on the winning end and really excited. It was a fun time. Made some friends. It was a good time.
Good deal, man.
So.
Now you got to figure out if he has a hog problem that we can take care of.
Well, he said they do. So here's another thing to talk, you know, talk a little bit about whitetails for a few minutes. So there's no ag anywhere. Zero. And there are deer everywhere. So all these people that are like, oh, well, you got corn and soybean. No, it's native browse. And Texas is a perfect example of why native browse trumps everything. Dude, there's like tiny leaves on everything and there were deer everywhere. And he was telling me they literally have to call friends and family and so on to come help them shoot deer because there's so damn many. Like, they can't kill enough deer and thin them down. And what's crazy is, short of going to like the Milk River in Montana, I mean, I don't think you could go to a place and see that many deer. I mean, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty neat to see. Tyler found an arrowhead while riding, you know, 20 miles an hour on an e-bike. So that was kind of funny. And I got stuck by just about every kind of thorn and needle you could ever imagine, which was also pretty rough. I got some pretty big ones in the back of my leg on the last morning that I couldn't even pull out of myself. I had to get help. It was bad. It was like porcupine needles. It was rough. So I could see my skin. Like, when I tried to pull them, my skin would be like sticking out an inch and a half, 2 inches. Like, I'm just trying to get them out and they won't come out, but my skin's stretching out. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to need your help, guys. Be ready for blood. Might squirt a little bit.
Worse than the sandbars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's different. Equally terrible, I would have to say, is probably how I'd go about saying it. It was rough, but worth it.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, anything else?
No, I think that's about. Oh, Josh has something. Josh is raising his hand.
Just quick. We'll get to this in another episode too. But so that experience, successful experience, like pretty much an awesome weekend from, you know, a third party, just hearing it standpoint, in my mind, I would consider it an awesome weekend.
Yeah.
So how did that compare to our weekend that we just had in Kentucky?
Bro, our weekend was tough. I mean, it was way better. And I even had to have a talk with myself after I left. I said, Kentucky will be nothing like that. But I mean, we've hunted Kentucky together a bunch. Birds gobble there normally. And normally there's good numbers and the whole nine. And now I'm like, where are these birds? Why aren't they gobbling? You know, they'll gobble once or twice and then shut up. And I'm like, dudes, come on, man. Somebody play. Like, can we just spook a bird, please? Like, give me something. It hasn't worked out yet, but I've picked
up. But it will.
I've picked up on a few patterns, so I think we can have some success this weekend.
Good deal.
So we're good. You feel like that's a good representation or a differentiation between like the subspecies?
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%. And I would say that it's a little rough on the eastern end with Kentucky right now. Like they're doing what I've seen in Ohio probably 3 or 4 years in my life, where you just, you know, like, well, the opening day after fly down, we couldn't buy a damn gobble. And, yeah. And I'm like, well, no way. Like, what's going on here? Like, we heard them on the roost and then nothing. And I get, you know, that they're henned up. I understand that. And I'm not freaking out, but I mean, really? Like, I can't even get you to shock gobble? Like, come on, man. Like, we don't like quiet turkeys here. Like, just talk a little bit. So, pretty good representation of the subspecies, though. I mean, the easterns just, they don't gobble as much, even though I've had plenty that do. But I mean, I'll just put it this way. Rios are stupid. Like, especially, and again, though, like, what's a Rio like after a couple weeks of being hunted, though? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I feel like most people that are hunting Rios probably aren't hunting them on tracks of public, you know, they're finding them on private tracks and or paying an outfitter or whatever, paying for access. And so you're getting those birds that are, you know, there's a high percentage odds chance that that bird hasn't been hunted in a while, if at all, or whatever. So there, I think that factors into it a little bit too.
More than likely.
So
yeah. Fair assessment.
Yeah. I try. Trying to like make everything make sense in my head as much as I can and like not be suicidal over Kentucky, because Kentucky was a real kick in the nuts, man. That was, and we lost a lot of sleep over that hunt and didn't even get to have an encounter or nothing. Like, not even a bird at 100 yards strutting and disappears over a damn hill. Like, show me some love. Anyway.
It's good to get kicked in the balls like that every once in a while, though.
Yeah, yeah. You got to get knocked down a little bit, and it teaches you, you know, because I came back. I'm like, I'm going to be the most patient turkey hunter of all time, and I'm going to wait and bullshit. Old Chris is coming off the bench, and we're going back to just woodsmanship. And if somebody wants to come to my calling, I'll let you come to my calling. If you want to talk a little bit and let me know what you're doing, I'll get out ahead of you and blow your damn head off that way. Like, I'm not. We got some red rockets to sling, man.
Well, and on that note, we will we'll close out. So, this has been the Mobile Hunter Podcast, Adventures of the Mobile Hunter. We've been your hosts, Rick Cates, Krister Lebert, and Josh Luck. Guys, thanks for listening tonight. Talk to you later. Bye.
See you.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. The best way you can support the podcast is by sharing online and with your buddies at Deer Camp. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a 5-star review.